So it's very interesting this morning to hear Tony Kass talking about his petabytes of data and gigabytes per second, and even the last talk as well, talking about these very large volumes of data and backup. And so really I'm coming from the other end, because something that we've noticed recently is that people are starting to make a lot heavier use of laptops and a lot of their personal data and a lot of important university data, in our case, or corporate data, is actually stored on these devices. And the backup situation really isn't as clear for laptops. So, in fact, you've seen a decrease in the sort of security and of your data because a lot of people are carrying stuff around like this. And so what I want to talk about today is just a project that we've been doing to investigate in a little bit more detail whether or not we could provide a better system for people to do their backups. And I should credit Zhang Li with most of the hard work on this project, but he isn't able to be here today, so I'm going to present it. So if you look at the laptop backup situation, it's really not so clear what you should do. I mean, I guess everybody here has been typing a lot of data into their laptops today. How do people go about backing this stuff up? So the solutions are really very ad hoc. So people use, if you survey people, they use external hard drives to copy odd files onto. They use recordable CDs or DVDs to put stuff on. And then there's been a lot of talk recently about cloud backups as well. Just wait while I find my glasses so I can read my own slide. Ah, there we are. Okay, so none of these solutions are actually very good options. These are some of the typical kind of problems that you get. So if you just back up to a hard drive, as I do, then you've not got any off-site storage for that. You know, what happens if I get a break-in and a robbery, or what happens if there's a fire? In fact, we suffered from that. Our department, a whole building of our department burnt down several years ago, and a lot of people lost data that was done, that was just saved on hard drives or CDs put in the drawer at work. And also, if you want to do kind of archival storage rather than just disaster recovery things, then you need a lot of kind of ad hoc storage. If you're doing things to DVDs or CDs, then you can't actually get very much data on them, and if you want to store multiple copies, you've got to burn them twice and so on. And there's been a lot of talk about cloud backup recently, and that's interesting, but the figures are amazing. These are typical figures that I'm seeing quoted for cloud backup type services to do your initial backup to. If you've got 300 gigs of data there, then maybe it takes 30 days to kind of trickle upload in the background, and you've got storage costs and things and transfer costs as well. So this was what we wanted to just investigate in a little bit more detail. We wanted to see what people were doing in practice and whether we thought there was some way of improving this. So we did a kind of semi-formal survey. We're looking at about 100 people or something like that, and we're just looking at our kind of our own sort of environment, which we were kind of conscious that that's a particular environment. It's an academic university department, but we thought that we felt that the results from that would be comparable to a lot of other similar environments. So we asked a lot of people what they do. And you can see that from that, the very large proportion have got some kind of ad hoc kind of partial backup scheme. People will do things like when they get worried about their data, they will copy what they think is the most important parts of it off onto something else at the time. So it's very, very ad hoc and not formal at all. Some people profess to do kind of fairly regular full backups. But of course, then it's kind of questionable what that means. Maybe it's stored in one place and it's vulnerable to some of the problems that we had earlier on. We also, the second kind of thing that we looked at was what sort of, we took some checksums and some data from a whole set of laptops in the department. And we had a look at the kinds of files that were stored on those and the proportion of those files. And just intuitively, we took three sort of broad categories to classify them into initially, because we felt that the characteristics of these files would be different. So there are obviously the kind of user files, which are people's home directories, basically. And then application files, which... I guess I should say we were concentrating here on a particular class. We were talking about Macintosh laptops, OS X laptops. So there was applications, and then there was what you would consider to be the system files. And then intuitively from that, we thought that, well, there's going to be a good deal of these system files, and application files are going to be common. They're going to be the same, surely, across different devices. So perhaps we could get somewhere by storing only one copy of those. And of course, if you've got a traditional managed environment for your desktop machines, as we still do for our desktops, for our Linux desktops, then what would probably happen is that all that system stuff would be generated by a configuration tool, and you wouldn't really worry about backing it up. And the user files would be stored somewhere separate. And your configuration tool would just regenerate your system files if there was a problem. But, of course, these are kind of personal machines, and they've got all sorts of odd things on there. So that approach doesn't work in this case. So what we did was to try to have a look at the duplication of the files. We took signatures of those files and did some sort of comparison to see what the commonality was like. And looking at those first two categories, the top one is the system files, and the bottom one's the application files. And you can see that there's kind of a good deal of sharing between those two things. Notice the shape of the curves is what's important. As you'd expect, the yellow bit, which is the simple volume of files, is pretty much linear, and the green bits is kind of flattening out, suggesting that there's after a certain point, most of the files in those areas are common. I guess the one thing to point out, though, is that you would have that those are not completely flat. If you take the system files, even when we've got 25 machines, you get a new machine comes along. That's going to have a few system files that are unique. And I was kind of interested in whether or not there were any important files in that class, because obviously we're talking about everything in the kind of system partition. So this is going to include stuff like log files as well, which are obviously going to be different from machines, and you wouldn't want to, you might not care about your backups of that, or you might care about it. But what we did was we drilled down a little bit more into that to see if there were really kind of important files in that class. And in fact, there are. It turns out there are. They're a very small proportion, but they're kind of quite hard to identify. In this case, there might be something like some special device driver that somebody's got installed, or some special permission file or something like that. And so even though the proportion of those files is really quite small, they're really the kind of things you wouldn't want to lose. So they kind of convinced us that it was sort of not a good idea to just back up your user files and forget about the system ones in this case, because when you come to restore, you probably find there's some small number of critical files that you'd lost, and maybe it would be hard to identify those, and they kind of cause problems. Okay, and then we had it. So that's the kind of data where we expected to see big gains, and we did see big gains. If you look at the user data, you'd expect to see a lot less, the top ones, the user data. And indeed you do. But this is the interesting thing, I think, about this is that it's going to improve the more machines you've got in the whole sample. And I think in certain cases it could improve kind of quite dramatically. I think we're talking about sort of an academic environment here where you've got people are storing things like papers and their own code and things like that, which doesn't, so the user data doesn't duplicate very much. But there are certain cases where, for example, if you're downloading large things like music files or something like that, then You can imagine two or three people in the same family or something like that having the same photo collections or the same music files, and you'd see quite a dramatic kind of duplication in that area there. So it doesn't duplicate very well in our case, but it does in general, or it might do better in general. And the bottom one's the aggregate, and there's still some saving there. So we started probing this a little bit more. We started to see if we could use a kind of deduplication techniques on this, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But I guess this is quite a sort of hot topic at the moment, so people are perhaps familiar with it. So the basic idea is that if you want to store a file on the backup system, you take effectively a checksum of that file, and you use that checksum as the identifier for the file, so that you can immediately tell if somebody else has stored the same data that you've already got, and you don't need to store that data again. So that would work very well. You can imagine I've downloaded some, or I've got some copy of some large sound file or movie file or something, and that has this unique kind of identifier, and if I check the backup system and if it's already there, then I don't need to transfer that and store it. So we started to have a look at some of the whether or not we could use the deduplication to improve that. We did some stuff about block sizes, but I think I'll skip that given time. But there's some problems with the deduplication in this case. Normally, the deduplication is done at the server end. And this means, in our case, that if you have different laptop users and you want to encrypt your data, which you would very much do in this case, you want to encrypt it at the client end. And if people encrypt it at the client end with different keys, then obviously the stuff's not going to deduplicate anymore, and that breaks your deduplication. So that was the first problem. And the second problem is that we actually want to do the comparison at the client end. We don't want to have to transmit our whole file to the server end to have the checksum computed at the other end, only to find that the thing is already there and we needn't have sent it over the wire. So we want to do some work at the local end. That actually emphasizes a point that the one of the important issues here is actually your communication performance as well. People might be trying to do this kind of backup from sitting in a room here where that you only have a thin connection, and that's maybe more important than your storage space. So if I just tackle the two of those problems, the first one here, there's a technique called convergent encryption around, which very neatly solves the first one of those. And I haven't got time to go into this in a lot of detail, but basically what you do is you use the hash of the file as the encryption key, so that if two people have the same file, it ends up being encrypted with the same key. And then, of course, the owners of that file will need to store that key, and they can get it back with that key, but nobody else can get the file back. So that's a really neat technique, and we use that to get around the first one of those problems. The only difficulty then, of course, is that you have a separate key for each file that you need to store. And what we've done there works out quite well is to store the keys for the individual files in a directory in some object which represents the directory, and then to recursively process that in the same way as the individual files are processed. So it means that your whole directory tree is encrypted, and the keys are transmitted up the tree, and then all you have is one single key for the root that you need to keep, and then once you've got that, you can unlock the whole kind of tree from it. So that's the kind of process that we were using to do the convergent encryption. And so the second one of the problems that I mentioned was the kind of transmission one. And this one's a little harder to solve. You don't want to transmit your data to the server to have the computation go on at the server end. So this really means that you have to use some kind of, you have to have some kind of special process at the client end. You can't just use a normal kind of file system transfer. And you have to have some kind of special process at the server end, which means that you can't easily just directly make use of some cloud storage like Amazon or something, because you have to have some process going on at the server end to handle the other end of the protocol. And so We looked at kind of several different approaches to this, and the most kind of promising thing for the situation that we were in the end is to have some kind of a departmental, think of it as a departmental or a family level server that would sit there and take the files in, and that would then could do the transmission of those up to some kind of cloud storage in the background if you wanted, and that would provide the necessary computation to do the hash checking and the authentication and so on. And so we built a prototype that did this, and it gives us the kind of in terms of storage, it was giving us the kind of savings that you saw in the graphs earlier on. But the this has not sort of given us so it's given us a lot of insight into the problem, but it's not given us a production kind of solution. And I think it was it's interesting that the performance that you're looking for here depends on a lot of underlying factors. I mentioned a moment ago the network transmission rate problem. So the particular algorithms that you use and the way in which you would do things seem to be incredibly sensitive to a number of variables, to the raw transmission speed, but also the latency and so on. So in the prototype, for example, it was very slow to make queries about existence queries of about lots of different files, as you would need to do for that kind of algorithm. So we found that we could speed that up a whole lot by packing up a whole load of file queries into one block and sending that to the server and having it do those and then return a batch to us. So I guess what I'm saying is that in practice there's a lot of different dimensions to the problem, and there are a lot of these techniques can speed things up a lot, but in any one particular situation you have to kind of tweak all the knobs to the right kind of settings. And I think that that's something that we would like to study a little bit more. So unfortunately at this point the original funding that provided the research funding to look at this is has finished now. But we're still kind of interested in carrying this forward. So Elise asked me to make a plea here that if there's anybody else who's interested in paying for us to carry on or collaborating in some way, then he'd be very interested in hearing about it. Okay, that's me.
Hello, Al Dakash from Tufts University. I have a quick question for you. It seems to me that the technique of using the same key for files that are identical across lab spaces would make the approach vulnerable to an inferential knowledge attack whereby you could figure out what files were on another person's laptop.
Yes, that is absolutely true. That that's true. And you actually kind of can't get around that if you want the thing to be fast, because if I've got this huge file and I'm going to back it up to the system, if it goes quickly, then you've got a good assumption that file's already there. Yeah. So you can't get around that. You have to live with that. Yeah.
You mentioned that you need both extra logic on the server and on the client so that you cannot use Amazon directly. For example, the Amazon storage server directly, but I'm wondering what kind of logic you need on the Amazon side, because it seems that the only thing you need to check is this file already present or not, or are there other things that need to be checked?
There's a bunch of stuff. For example, you only have like one user account on the Amazon thing, so everybody who was using it would have to have the same account, mm-hmm. Which isn't good. And you really need to double check the checksums on the server side. Otherwise, someone can poison your system by submitting something and saying it's got this checksum when it really hasn't, so that it thinks your data's up there and it's not. Mm-hmm. And then there are performance issues, like I was talking about, packing up the queries into one set rather than making individual queries. So there's kind of a whole range of small things like that.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Peter Spiegel from Argonne National Lab. Hi. And I actually have two questions for you. And both of them have to do with the deduplication.
Right.
First of all, how are file permissions and ownerships handled in this system? Was that taken under account? Because obviously, right. on my laptop, I may have one set of permissions on a given file, and, right. and you would have a different one, and that wouldn't be right. communicated within the hash.
Yeah. So the file attributes as in Unix are part of the directory rather than the file itself. So what happens is the directory itself, we build an object to represent the directory, and that contains the standard file system attributes for the file, plus the hash of that file, and then we treat that whole thing there as one other object that we store. So what that means is that if you had a whole tree in your file system that was identical to mine in every way, including the permissions and everything. It would be able to detect that at the highest kind of common point immediately without making any requests further down. But if you had something like file permissions that were different at a particular point, it would follow down the branch until it got to a common point. Yeah.
Okay. And just one other question. Going back to the first question I was asked regarding security, you mentioned that the hashes of the files are then used as the keys. So,
yeah.
I mean, that provides a unique key for each file, and
yeah.
that would not leave your organization. It wouldn't, you know, so Amazon, if you stored your data at Amazon, they wouldn't know how to decrypt the files.
That's right. Yeah.
However, the statement, I think, can be made that, you know, by pushing all those keys to the caching server, you don't really have private information. You can't have private data, at least within the organization, because your encryption key for your data is on a caching server somewhere.
No. It never leaves your own machine. It's still
well,
your own machine.
Then how do you deduplicate if I never tell you what
you
my
use
keys
it,
are?
You use the convergent encryption
Well, then, I mean, I thought the caching server would store then a list of the hashes that are stored
Amazon. No, you don't need to store any lists of the hashes, because if you have a file, and I have the same file, you encrypt that file with the hash of the file contents.
Correct.
And you keep the key. And I encrypt mine with the hash of the file contents, and I keep the key. But we can still tell whether or not the same file is on the system. And if he hasn't got the same file, he hasn't got the key, so he can't get the file back.
Okay, I guess I'm missing how can my laptop tell that the file I have is already stored?
Because it's stored under the name of this key.
Where is that key?
The key's public.
Right.
But you can't get the contents.
Well,
you have to know that to get it back.
If I copy the key, I could request. And from the Amazon storage and be able to decrypt it. I mean, once you have the key, you can decrypt the data. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it's kind of.
So
I suggest you just look at the algorithm in the paper. It's a little kind of hard.
Okay,
to,
yeah. I'll take a look.
But it works. Yeah, believe me. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry.
My name is David Coes. I have a quick question. What did you decide not to use backup PC instead? That one uses rsync and it has deduplication built into the whole thing.
I'm not sure whether I even looked at that.
Okay.
But it's not going to do encryption.
Not in the exact same way you do. It would be encrypted on, say, use ENCFS on the server, so the server would see the data.
Oh yeah. So that was one of our primary requirements, were that we had to do encryption at source.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks.